What's going on, everybody? Keith Niebuhr of Gators Online from frigid Tampa Bay, joined by Zach Albaverde, senior reporter, and he's in the frozen tundra of High Springs, Florida. It's cold this week, Zach, but it's always hot on the Florida Gators athletic beat. We got a lot to talk about on this edition of the Gators Online show. We've got some coaching news, some player acquisitions, and obviously the Gator basketball team is number 5 in the country, coming off of a big win on Wednesday night. Has another big game Saturday at the O-Dome or whatever it's called now. And so we've got to get to we've got a lot to get to today. So let's get rolling. Zach, you had a big scoop this morning. Vinny Sunseri, defensive coordinator at Jacksonville State University, is interviewing in Gainesville this week for an open position with the Florida Gators football staff. What can you tell us about that? That was a significant breaking news development that you unearthed this morning.
Yeah, obviously Florida has an open spot on its staff right now. Ever since the departure of Austin Armstrong, there's been a lot of different candidates that Florida has looked at, some DC candidates as well. And right now, Sunseri is interviewing at Florida this Friday as we speak. He actually arrived in Gainesville on Thursday, and he is a candidate for that open spot that they have on the staff. We would presume that he would come in and work with the safeties, given his background. He's a former Alabama safety, former NFL safety, was recently the safeties coach with Washington, and also spent some time coaching defense with the New England Patriots, as well as he was the running backs coach. So he comes from a really great coaching pedigree, Sal Sunseri, a longtime college and NFL coach and a former assistant with the Gators. He was their defensive line coach in 2018. There's some ties there. There's some ties, of course, to Napier. These two guys go back to their days at Alabama. So this is a guy that we kind of learned about this week as a candidate for Florida. You know, we're not sure what this means for, you know, the rest of the staff, but we do know that he would fill the open vacancy that they have right now and be a position coach for the Gators.
Yeah, that is an interesting and significant development with regard to the Florida Gators coaching staff. And you and I had both heard that, you know, there was some talk that perhaps they wanted to give Will Harris some help in the secondary. You know, that's an awfully big room when you're dealing with, you know, safeties, corners, presumably the star position, which is like the nickel as well. That's a lot of guys. And
Austin Armstrong, you know, he coached, you know, the safeties, and I think he worked with the stars at one point. Now,
he did.
We did learn, I think, at one point last season, he did start coaching the linebackers as well. So
that's right.
But from the get-go, when Austin Armstrong there, we did understand that his role was kind of versatile and that he could bounce around at different positions. But he did primarily work in the secondary for most of his tenure. So they have to fill that void in terms of the coaching aspect.
And this is a young coach, early 30s, played. I think he won, and I know you went over some of this. I was getting a text, but won a couple national championships with the University of Alabama. Yep. Everybody knows, like you mentioned, his dad's got the coaching resume that's strong as well. But this is a guy that's going to understand the lay of the land, and he was just hired at Jacksonville State by their head coach, Charles Kelly, who has coached at Auburn, who has coached at Alabama, who has coached at Florida State, played in the SEC at Auburn. That's a guy, Charles Kelly, that wouldn't hire you to come in as your defensive coordinator if he didn't think you had the chops both on the recruiting trail and on Saturdays and during the week game planning. So this is a bright young coach that's got an outstanding resume, and we'll have to see if it works out with Florida. I mean, is this a move you would give a thumbs up to, Zach?
Yeah, I mean, if they are – I think deciding to just go in the direction of just adding an assistant coach, you know, obviously there was a unique dynamic there with Austin Armstrong and Ron Roberts, because Austin was the DC in title, but Ron came in as the head coach of the defense, or, you know, in the co-DC. But then we learned that he was calling the plays. So it's kind of been up in the air as to how this was going to come together and how the Gators would move forward from a staffing standpoint on defense. You know, at this time, Ron Roberts is still with the Gators. His role has not changed. And if this is the direction that they go, presumably they might just keep things how it was in 2024, where Ron will continue to call the plays. And if they do fill this spot with Sunseri, he would come in as an assistant coach. And again, like we said, work with the secondary, kind of fill the void that was left by Austin Armstrong, provide Will Harris some help. And don't forget, they had another coach in the secondary as well, Keith, that recently got a full-time job. And he was an analyst for the Gators, but he worked extensively with the safeties as well. So there's a void, not just from a assistant coach standpoint, but they also lost an analyst too. So this would address a need that they have from a coaching standpoint. And then just, you're always looking for the right fit, right? You're looking for someone that's going to come in and do a good job, thrive at Florida, thrive in the SEC, thrive on the recruiting trail, and thrive coaching the players. He does check a lot of boxes in that he's been exposed to the SEC. He played in the SEC, obviously. He's got, you know, a pretty impressive coaching background, and he's got a lot of ties to the staff. I mentioned Napier. He was a player at Alabama when he was a coach, but he also was there with Rob Sale, Russ Callaway, and he also spent 4 years with Joe Houston in New England. They were on the same Patriots staff that entire time. So a lot of it makes sense.
Yeah, coaches always go. You know, people are talking about this on the message board. Oh, don't they always go in their inner circles? Yeah, they always do. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, they just do. You go with guys that you're comfortable with 90% of the time. Sometimes you have to go outside of your circle. But ideally, you want people that know you, know your system, but you know them. You know how they think. You know their work ethic. You know what time they wake up. You know whether they're going to call in for extra time off because they're lazy or not. You know, you get to know people when you work with them previously. So,
yeah.
Or when you can pick up the phone and call somebody that has worked with them that's in your circle. So, interesting there. Before we get on to our next story, I also want to ask you one thing, Zach, about that. You know, you and I had a lot of offensive coaching news last week. We broke the stories that Billy Gonzalez had re-signed, that Jabbar Jalouk, the running backs coach, I should mention Gonzalez, the receivers coach, Jabbar Jalouk, the running backs coach, had re-signed. You had information on the co-offensive line coach, Rob Sale. You also had information on edge/outside linebackers coach, Mike Peterson. Those two guys expected to, at least now expected to stay also. So this really the bulk of what we think we're going to see is on the defensive side. Zach, I couldn't do a show without asking, because you get to ask this all the time. Do you think he's going to hire an OC? Do you think Billy Napier is going to hire an OC? I got to ask, you know that.
Yeah, I mean, I did think that it was contingent on maybe some staff changes taking place, or maybe some reformatting of the staff, which I do think will happen. But, you know, personally, I don't think so. I know that it's been considered. I've heard of some candidates. I know that there's coaches that are obviously interested in being able to come to Florida and call plays for DJ Lagway and all these weapons that they have on offense and a veteran offensive line. But I also think, on the same token, I think Billy wants to see what his offense can do with all these players that he's recruited and kind of this system that he's built. And while I'm sure there's been some consideration, because I think that it's always something that's been on the table. I do think at some point he's probably going to get to the point as a head coach where he wants to turn over the keys to somebody. But it's got to be the right situation, the right fit, the right timing. And it doesn't look right now, with things staying put on the offensive side of the ball, that we are going to see a change. I don't expect it.
Got to apologize to everybody and Zach. I've been stumbling more than usual with my words. Because Zach is such a newsbreaker, I'm getting all these damn texts and phone calls about his story that he wrote this morning. So thanks, Zach. You're making my job even harder here. No. But so there is some other potential news, and it could be on the offensive side. But we don't really know what to think here. But listen, for the past few days, Zach and I have been tracking down leads and good ones, credible leads, credible sources, outstanding sources. About Steve Spurrier Jr., the head ball coach's son. He's 53 years old. He's not a little guy. He's a guy that's well-traveled. He's worked in the NFL with the old Gator skins. They were called the Washington Commanders now, but the Washington Redskins back then. He's worked with Mike Leach at both Washington State and Mississippi State as a receivers coach. He's worked at Oklahoma. He was a GA at Florida at one time. He also has worked at Tulsa for the last 2 years as OC. They've got a new coaching staff there, so he's looking for something new to do in this next year. There's a constant movement in coaching. So Steve Spurrier Jr., what can we tell you about what we've learned there? He has told us that he has talked to Florida about potentially you know, maybe being on that staff at some point. We know there's some reports out there that it's imminent or whatnot, but all we can tell you is that as of Friday morning, Steve Spurrier Jr. told us that nothing is set in stone. He's still exploring a range of opportunities. But that said, Zach, we think there's certainly a possibility that he ends up on the Florida staff. Dan Enos, who was an analyst last year, has left to be, I think, the QB coach at Wake Forest. So it feels like the stars are aligning. And, you know, it wouldn't be a surprise, like we said. Zach, any thoughts on Steve Spurrier Jr. maybe coming back to the Swamp?
Yeah, man, this is an interesting story that, we've been tracking here the last couple days. And, you know, we first heard about it last week as a potential for Florida. You know, we still got to see where things go from here. But anytime that you hear that name, anytime you hear that lineage, anytime you hear the possibility of anything related to that, it gets exciting for Florida fans. You know, that would obviously cement things for the HBC. He's already the ambassador to the program and is around so much. I think that would give him even more reason to come around, be involved, be supportive of the program. But, you know, I think Steve Spurrier Jr. as well, you know, he's spent a lot of time with his dad, you know, as we know, and you know, he's also branched out and done some of his own things. But I think if the opportunity does present itself that he gets to come to Florida, Keith, it allows him to kind of, you know, associate with another group of coaches, kind of get out of his bubble of what he's been into. And certainly set himself up for more opportunities in the future. This would raise his profile if he gets to come to Florida and be at his, you know, dad's alma mater and then in this kind of school where he made a name for himself. And obviously being able to work at Florida at the time when they've got DJ Lagway and a lot of things going offensively, I think is something that would be good for him. He would come in as an analyst, but, you know, we know that basically – where this opportunity came open was through Dan Enos, who has basically been on staff the past couple of years as a special assistant to the head coach, kind of works directly with Billy. You know, there's a lot of analysts on staff and a lot of them that work on different sides of the ball and focus on certain positions. This role that Enos had was specifically to work with Billy and to help him out and to assist him in his game planning, play calling, everything that he has to do in terms of his job responsibilities as a coach. So our understanding is that Steve Spurrier Jr. would come in to fill that void that has now been left by Dan Enos. So you mentioned, Keith, that he's been an offensive coordinator at Tulsa and obviously got to do some things at South Carolina with his dad. This would allow him to keep kind of working in that capacity, continue to further, you know, his offensive acumen. And it would just make a lot of sense for all parties involved if it plays out. And like you said, Keith, I think you're the only one that's talked to him right now to get a lowdown on where this thing is at.
Whoops. We're hitting different buttons at the same time. Yeah, some of the best texts I get, actually, I need to point out when we're recording, are actually from Zach. He knows how to crack me up while I'm actually talking here. I think if you're a Gator fan, this is something you would be excited about. I mean, he's well-traveled. He's got a lot of experience. He understands the lay of the land. He understands the dynamics in Gainesville and at the University of Florida. But, you know, he's also got a good track record. I mean, the guy can coach. I mean, he's worked with some of the best guys, Mike Leach. I mean, if you understand, if you work with Mike Leach, Zach, chances are you probably understand the passing game, right?
And correct.
And if you're Florida, you probably, having DJ Lagway and all these talented young receivers, you probably want to expand your passing acumen as a program. But we have more on that situation. We do at GatorsOnline.com. Actually, that and Vinny Sinceri interviewing with Florida. So make sure you go to Gators Online to check out that. Zach, you need to read anything right now?
I do, yeah. Let me get to that read real quick before we stick to the quarterbacks and kind of stay with that topic. But I definitely want to encourage all Florida fans to go to roback.com if you haven't and check out their gear that they released this past football season. completely changing the game with their incredibly comfortable activewear. Their new licensed game day collection is out, and it's awesome. Novel polo designs, clean hoodie and Q-tip designs for some of your favorite schools, including the Florida Gators. Definitely worth checking out. Nobody else on the market is pairing these level of custom designs with this quality of activewear. Use the code Gators20 on roback.com for a generous 20% off all new customers. That's roback.com, R-H-O-B-A-C.com. 20% off all performance polos, shorts, and more with the code Gators20. And Keith, you mentioned at the top of the show some new pieces in that quarterback room.
Well, you know, it's been an interesting ride. Let's put it that way. Back in December, Florida landed a commitment from transfer quarterback Deshaun Purdy of Charlotte, of the college Charlotte. And he had played 1 year, started a bunch of games when the other starter got hurt, and did well. He completed only 50% of his pass, but he showed an unbelievable climb during the season from playing horribly to playing like a guy that, man, this is a guy with some real potential. We had talked to a defensive coordinator who faced him last season and thought he would be a perfect fit for Florida. And we thought he was a perfect fit for Florida. And Ryan O'Hara, who coaches the quarterbacks at Florida, and Billy Napier thought he was a perfect fit for Florida. And he signed with the Gators. But as we got closer to his enrollment, he started to have second thoughts. And all along, he knew that he would be behind DJ Lagway, sit for a couple years, get some experience. Look, they've shown they're going to play backup quarterbacks. You would play in routes. You would maybe have some packages and for other games and things like that. But it sort of scared him off. Let's just be honest, Zach. Let's call it for what it is. He's a guy that really wants to be out there starting since he's gotten a taste of it. And I get that. But it left Florida in a precarious spot because when he didn't end up at Florida, Florida released him, we should say, and he has since committed to Wake Forest. He was not allowed to transfer to another SEC school. But when that opened up, Florida was really put in a jam, Zach, because this was a guy that they thought would certainly be competing for the number two spot, if not the, you know, the obvious number two, given that he started college games. But they tracked, they did their research, got in touch with Harrison Bailey, a transfer from Louisville, well-traveled. He started his career at Tennessee, started a game or two as a true freshman, then later ended up at UNLV, and now the last couple of years at Louisville. He's only thrown for about 1,000 yards in his career, but this is a guy, big, I wouldn't say he's that mobile, big drop-back type quarterback, but he's got experience, he's got age, he's got a strong arm. Florida went and watched him throw a couple weeks ago, like what they saw, brought him in last weekend for an official visit. It went well, and he is signed, sealed, and delivered as a Gator. Last year at Louisville, Zach, he completed 24 of 33 passes, 227 yards and 3 touchdowns in a backup role, you know, back at UNLV in 2022, also in a backup role, 30 of 58, 318 yards, 2 touchdowns. This is a guy that I will say was a 4-star recruit coming out of high school. In fact, rival Zach had him as a 5-star. So people have always been a believer in his arm. And as a true freshman, completed 70% of his passes at Tennessee. For 578 yards, 4 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. So he's got some potential, but my question to you, Zach, is I'm giving you all the stats. I'm not telling people where he fits in with the roster. That's what you can do. So give us an indication here where we see him playing.
Yeah. And it's interesting because we always knew that for Florida to go out and get a transfer quarterback in this cycle was going to be tough. It's a hard sell to ask a guy to come in and be the backup to DJ Lagway, knowing that that's going to be the role coming in. However, a couple things. Florida went through the 2024 season last year and lost both of its starting quarterbacks to injuries, and they both happened on running plays. Florida runs its quarterbacks in this offense, so that's just the reality of being a QB, not only at the University of Florida, but in the SEC. So I'm sure that not only for Deshaun Purdy, but even Harrison Bailey, as much as you don't want to put that juju out there, the Gators had quarterback injuries this past season and had to go into games without the guy that they had been playing with as their starter twice. So it happens. And it doesn't just happen to Florida. The other stat there is that only 2 schools this past season in the SEC went through the entire year with their starting quarterback playing every game and not having to leave at any point due to injury.
I didn't know that. I actually didn't know that. That's
only two schools. Hmm. I want to say it was Vanderbilt and LSU. Hmm. The only other school that could have been in that category was Ole Miss, but even Jackson Dart at one point in 2024 left the game because he got banged up and Austin Simmons had to come in and quarterback that thing for a while as the backup. So point is it happens. And in this league with 16 teams and all the conference games that they play, and if you run your quarterback, you need to have a reliable number two that you can count on and put in the game at any point. So that's, I think, important to get out of the gate, because while it was a hard sell, there is still a need there. And I think that was something that they sold to Deshaun Purdy, something that they sold to Harrison Bailey. Obviously, Deshaun had second thoughts, didn't want to come in and be in that type of situation. Harrison is coming in and trying to make the best of it. Obviously, I think for Florida fans, they would hope to never see him unless it's a blowout. Unless you get in the games and DJ's just run it up and he gets to come in there for some mop-up duty. But God forbid, if DJ does turn an ankle or just need a breather or take a hard hit and got to come out for a series, you're more than capable of being able to handle things with Harrison Bailey. This is a guy that has started in the SEC at Tennessee. He's been at a lot of different stops. His last game that he played with Louisville in the bowl game, he played very well in that game. Made some plays, threw some touchdowns, like played very well. So he's a guy that's coming in with a lot of experience. I think that he's been humbled probably by his college career so far and some of the ups and downs that he's been through. So I don't think that there's going to be any issue in terms of an ego or some tension in the room. I think that he'll come in. And honestly, Keith, there's going to be some things that he could probably help DJ with, just advice or bouncing things off of. Or he's been around the block and he's seen some things and experienced some stuff that'll be somebody that DJ can potentially learn from.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the question is, with Deshaun Purdy, Zach, you had a guy, he was going to be the backup the next couple of years, but he would be developing toward being the starter in 27. Correct. Okay, so to me, there's two sides to this. Yeah, you lost a guy that could have been a very capable number two, but also a guy that could have been challenging for and probably the favorite, perhaps, to be the starter in 2027. So you just signed, excuse me, Tremel Jones, 2025 four-star from Jacksonville Mandarin, missed his senior year with some ankle ligament type stuff, but he's going to be full speed, he says. We've been told, he says too, but by spring practice. Then you have Aiden Warner. You're going to sign, you've got a commitment from 2026 four-star Will Griffin. So he would be on the team in 2026. That would give him 1 year, presumably, if that's DJ Lagway's last year, to get acclimated to the program. So you have Jones, Tremel Jones, and Will Griffin competing for that 2026 job. My guess is Florida potentially could have to sign a second quarterback this class. This 2026 class. I mean, there's always moving parts, Zach. But I think that hurt as much as anything. Harrison Bailey's a guy you're going to have for 1 year.
Yes.
And you won't have him for 2 years, but presumably by 2026, Tremel Jones will be ready to go to be that number two guy, right? The question would be, what does it shape up to be, or whatever the word is I'm looking for? What does it look like in 2027? We don't know. Now, that's a long way off anyway, and things could have changed between now and then and probably would have regardless. But it was an interesting dynamic, another layer to the Deshaun Purdy situation with him not ending up at Florida.
I would also add, Keith, that given the situation and how it played out and how unfortunate it was for Florida from a timing standpoint, for them to have recruited, targeted, landed, and signed Deshaun Purdy and then have the transfer portal close and have all the top options available at the quarterback position in the portal taken up from all the other schools, and then to lose Deshaun Purdy at the point in the cycle that they did and have to go back to the drawing board and try to get a quarterback from the portal after the fact, for Florida to end up with Harrison Bailey as that guy in that scenario, it could have been worse.
It could have been a lot. Hey,
it could have been worse. It could
have been a lot worse. And we've seen worse. Okay.
Yeah.
Can you, what do you think that phone call? Oh, go ahead. Finish your thought.
I didn't know where they were going to go after they lost Purdy.
Well, that came out. We didn't know where they were going to go. And I think our national team of Pete Nakos and Steve Wolfong said, hey, by the way, they're going to go watch this guy throw tomorrow. Like, what? I mean, it just didn't really, you know, because it was weird because you're thinking, okay, and they knew this. They knew there was going to be an uphill battle having DJ Lagway. If you wanted to bring in a transfer quarterback, I mean, like, how are you going to get a really good transfer quarterback? Because they want to play. If you're leaving one school, the theory is you're leaving because you want to play. So that would mean, well, for 2 years, that guy wouldn't play. So the next best thing would be to get a young guy like they did with Deshaun Purdy, right? And they were in this great situation. I mean, it was really a beautiful find, if you think about it. A great evaluation. They beat out Georgia. He had an offer from North Carolina, although ultimately the Tar Heels didn't end up pushing, but Mississippi State offered, Auburn offered. So this was a guy that was like, hey, man, we've done something as a staff here. This is significant. And then I can't imagine that phone call, Zach, where Deshaun Purdy's calling Billy Napier and Ryan O'Hara and saying, hey, by the way, I'm backing out. And I mean, this would be akin to your bride-to-be telling you about, you know, 24 hours before the wedding that's in the Maldives that you've invited 100 people to, that it's no longer happening, right? I mean, so bad break. When life gives you lemons, you make lemonade, I guess. And they did. And Harrison Bailey, I got to know him in high school. I lived up in Atlanta. He was from Marietta, recruited by all the schools down there. Yeah, good head on his shoulder, smart kid. You know, I think it's going to be a good situation. He's been in the battles. Okay, you know, being in the battles doesn't mean you're always out on the field, but you were part of it, all right? Yeah. He knows what it, 4 years of Power Four programs. This is a guy that's going to be, could be a good asset, not only for on the field, but Florida's got some young quarterbacks. Tremell Jones.
Yeah.
These are guys they can lean on. Even DJ Lagway to some extent, you know, because he's still going through the process. Can you imagine the whirlwind it was for DJ Lagway last year? And now he's got this veteran guy that he can run things off of. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Well, even though he had Mertz, I'm just saying, but, you know, new guy.
For sure. It's still somebody that he can lean on, bounce things off of, get feedback from. Could do it a little bit with Aiden Warner, but not really. He was just as inexperienced as DJ was, and certainly would be the case with Tremell. So, look, if Florida would have had to go into the spring – with Aiden Warner and Tremell Jones as their candidates for the backup job, and then potentially having to go back into the spring portal again to look for a quarterback, it would not have been ideal. That would have been put Florida in a very tough spot for them to be able to have Harrison Bailey enroll, go through spring, understand the offense, have a clear 1 and 2 established at the quarterback position. Florida is very fortunate, I think, to be in the situation that they are, given the circumstances that they just went through with Deshaun Purdy. It could have been a lot worse, to reiterate.
Yes, sir. I keep interrupting. Couldn't agree with you more, Zach. I mean, when you add it all up, losing that guy, when you lost him, what you lost in him, and then what you were able to get, given what was out there, which wasn't much, you did pretty damn good.
There was like the Buffalo quarterback. That was another name that we Softball, they probably would have had to wait to the spring, Keith.
And at that point, the guy's coming in, he's got to learn everything, doesn't have much time. You know, it would have been a lot to handle. Zach, we've got some hoops to talk about next, but I got to ask you, do we have any more ad reads before
we do? Let me get this last one in here. We got to pay the bills, and then we'll talk some Florida hoops. I definitely want to encourage all Florida fans out there to go and check out MyPerfectFranchise.net. If you're ready to leave the corporate rat race for the American dream, looking for a side hustle while working your current job, wanting to diversify, build wealth, and or leave a legacy, Andy can help. He is a franchise consultant as well as a franchise owner and helps people find franchises that fit their skill sets, financial requirements, time to commit, and more. His services are 100% free, and he's here to help. If you have any questions about business ownership, you can learn more and contact Andy anytime at MyPerfectFranchise.net or calling or texting him at 404-973-9900. 01. Keith, I'm going to guess if you were to invest in a franchise, it would be something like Top Golf or something, right?
No, it's funny you should mention. I've been talking to some friends of mine about maybe building some type of indoor golf simulator down here in Tampa. Okay. Right. Because I need to hit in between articles, I could hit 300 or 400 shots each day. You know what I mean? Perfecting my swing or making it less crappy than it is a big goal of mine. Okay.
Well, anybody that's looking for that kind of franchise in the Tampa Bay area, Keith is your guy.
Absolutely. No doubt. Zach, I was on an airplane the other day on Wednesday flying from Atlanta after getting stuck in the airport for 7 hours. They're flying from Atlanta back to Tampa. I didn't get to watch the basketball game. I was trying to follow it online. When we took off, they were just getting slaughtered. You know, it looked bad. And then I didn't have anything on my phone for 90 minutes. Nothing. We land. It comes back on. Florida wins by one. What did I miss? What? Because it didn't look good, okay? It didn't look good in that first half. So how did Florida pull off that big win against a SEC winless South Carolina team, but on the road the other night? How did they pull this out?
Well, the player of the game was Will Richard. Just amazing performance, 20-plus, but the circumstances around it, you know, he was the first Florida player all season that had been listed – on an availability report with an injury this past week. He was listed as probable for the South Carolina game. And again, given that status, we all expected him to play, but it's like, okay, well, what's going on with Will Richard? Well, we found out after the game from Todd Golden, he's been dealing with a bad toe. And it's something that's been bothering him, clearly almost kept him out of the game. And he has been toughing it out each and every night, giving the Gators 30-plus minutes. So he has that type of performance with that type of injury to the point that he was, you know, it was, they didn't know whether or not he was going to play. And then for him to deliver in the way that he did down the stretch, makes a huge three-pointer with 105 left in the corner off a great pass from Walter Clayton, who also, along with Elijah Martin, made some huge plays. Those three guards scored Florida's last 23 points of the game. And then the game winner from Richard, just an incredible play, incredible moment for Florida basketball. That was the only lead that they had of the entire
That's
game.
Wild. Yeah.
So he was the player of the game, Keith. But I would say the story of the game was Florida's defensive switch that they made for Todd Golden to take that, you know, basically they were getting a bunch of success in the half court offense. The Gamecocks were. Todd Golden decided to switch it up. He called the full court press. Admittedly, after the game, says it's not something that he likes to run. He's not comfortable in it, but he had to switch it up. They did it a little bit, and Florida had a ton of success with it, caused a bunch of turnovers. There was that sequence there where I think they had 6 straight points, and then they didn't go away from it. They just kept the pressure on. They kept turning over South Carolina. They kept getting transition buckets. Florida had a 22-0 advantage in fast break points, and they finished with 13 steals, 10 in the second half. So that's how effective that full court press was. And 13 steals was the most that Florida had all season, and Will Richard had 3 of those.
Am I wrong in suggesting or thinking that this is one of the biggest wins of the season? I mean, let me backtrack.
No, you're not.
South Carolina was, I believe, 0-5 in the SEC. Yeah, it's on the road, but 0-5 in the SEC. You can't lose that game. And sometimes winning a game that you could have lost, or maybe you're when you steal a win, let's say,
sure,
it's sweet, especially when you look at the road ahead, man. I mean, we take for granted. They're number 5 in the AP poll, number 6 in the NCAA net rankings. But this league is tough, and one loss can become 2, 3, 4, and 5 in a row really fast if you're not careful, right? Yeah. So you tell me, how big was that win over a winless team in conference play?
Yeah, you make a good point, Keith, because you know you don't want to be the team that gives them their first dub. It's going to happen at some point because South Carolina showed that they got some talent. Part of the reason why they've been struggling is because they're down some of the starters in their backcourt. But nonetheless, given the circumstances, it was kind of a must-win situation for Florida. You mentioned some of the games that they've got coming up. They got to go to on the road at Tennessee. They got to go on the road at Auburn. You know, they got Georgia at home on Saturday, which, you know, had been playing good until as of late. But it's just so hard to go on the road in the SEC, especially in this year with this league, and get a win. So when you can get them done, it's just golden, man. Like it means so much. And especially for Florida to be able to do it in that way, where they did not play their best game, they got out rebounded, they got out physicaled, and they showed that they can weather the storm, that they can have the, you know, be able to handle the adversity and fight back in a situation like that. I mean, Keith, they, you know, you say you didn't see the end of the game. They fought back and they put themselves in position to tie it and make it a one possession game. And South Carolina just, Zachary Davis just hit a killer three-pointer to beat the shot clock, and it was a bank three-pointer. It put them back up by either 4 or 6 points, and just gave all the momentum right back to South Carolina with like a minute left in the game, and Florida didn't blink. That sequence right there, which was really unfortunate for Florida because they played great defense on that possession, they did not let it deter them. And, you know, that's what winning and championship teams do, Keith.
That's right. You know, that's what I was just going to say. There's something to be said for finding a way to win. When you go back to that first Final Four team, probably before you were born.
Yeah.
1990. Yeah, you're getting up there, buddy. 1994. That team, the motto, Lon Kruger's Final Four team, was find a way. Find a way. Just figure it out. Find a way to win the game. The 2000 team that made the Final Four, I believe, beat Butler on that last second driving layup from Mike Miller. Otherwise, they don't make the Final Four. They don't even get out of the first round. Even the teams with Noah, Horford, Brewer, bad nights, do you still find a way to win? Do you still have it in you to figure out how to get this thing done? And on the road in the SEC, I think by the end of the year, South Carolina is going to have a handful of wins in the SEC. They've got a quality team. Schedule's tough. They're going to win some games at home. But with what's ahead with Florida, they had to win that game. I mean, it's not like they weren't going to get the tournament, the NCAA tournament, or they weren't going to win the SEC title. None of that stuff. Just when you look
momentum.
At it, yeah, momentum, figuring things out, learning how to win when it's not your best night. And boy, I tell you, when you've got so many different combinations and so much versatility as a team, if Condon's not having a great day on the board, then somebody else can. Hawk can come in, or Chinyelu, I can never pronounce his last name. They can pick up the slack. You've got so many pieces on this team. I think that's what I love about this team. And like I said, I didn't get to see the game tonight, but it's that they've got a little bit of everything. There's really no glaring hole other than maybe, Zach, you I don't know, you can agree or disagree with me. You know, they don't have a true point guard. I mean, Walter Clayton's a hell of a player, but he's not a true point guard. So ball handling, clutch free throws, you improve those things, Zach. I mean, this is a team that could do some damage, isn't it?
It is. And that's, you know, the turnovers is one thing that they've been trying to avoid. They were good about it the other night. You know, the one thing I'll say with Clayton is whatever you lose in, you know, his not true point guardness, you gain in just his ridiculous playmaking ability. You know, so – you know, he's just got to be better about that. I think more on defense is where he, you know, he needs to clean up. He's an excellent three-point or free throw shooter. He has had a couple moments this season where he's missed some two free throws uncharacteristically late in games. Yeah. But I do think defensively he needs to be a little bit better. And look, it's been a transition to him, but he's, you know, the other night, I mean, he had 7 assists in that game. And made some really, really nice passes there. He's got the ability. I just think it's, you know, adjusting to that new position. But, you know, I think the biggest thing for this team is be able to keep their level of defense up. Like when they are playing lights out and just completely on it and dialed in defensively, they are such a tough team to beat. because they can take away the three-point shot. They can dominate in the paint. They can be disruptive and get steals and blow up plays. They can do it all. I mean, they've had lapses at times, and you're not just going to, you know, dominate for, you know, 40 minutes every single night out. But there's a lot to like about the strides they've made on defense.
Let me be clear. Anybody that's – I'm sure I'll get ripped for being negative. I love Walter Clayton. Okay, he's a hell of a player. And you know, what I like about him, Zach, is – man, I mean, I've been following this basketball team since I was a kid, since like the early 80s. He's got a real swagger to him.
Yeah.
You're at the game. I'm watching from TV. Yeah. And I'm thinking Andrew Moton swagger. I thought Moton had maybe – Vernon Maxwell had a different kind of swagger, but Moton was a guy that – Dan Cross swagger. I mean, I'm going to make this shot when my team needs it. I'm going to make a play. I'm not going to be affected by any of that. I just love the way – the attitude that he takes out there. And obviously, well, Elijah Martin's been a hell of an addition too.
Well, and it was interesting with Clayton the other night, Keith. You know, he obviously had the record on the line, right? Yeah. He was tied with Michael Frazier Jr., most consecutive games in a row with a three-pointer. He just needed one. But yet, he came out on Wednesday night in Columbia, Keith, and he did not press it. He wasn't trying to force – any three? I don't even know if he attempted a three-pointer in the first half. He might have attempted one, but he was just kind of letting the game come to him. He was trying to run the offense. He made a couple nice jump shots from two-point range in the first half, but you just knew at some point that he was going to pull up from downtown and make some plays, and boy, did he. He did it. He hit two in the second half. One obviously broke the record. But then the other one he made with about, I want to say 3 minutes to go, it was a transition three that they just kind of left him open. He's like, all right, and just absolutely drained it. Big time.
You know, in my world of football recruiting, coaches will tell me it's not always what the kids' best plays look like. We expect the top guys to have great highlight films. It's what they do on their worst plays. It's what they do on their worst plays. Are they still good? Are they still competitive? Is the mind still sharp? Right.
Yeah.
Well, so on a bad night for Florida, they still went into a very tough place to play. It is, and still won. And there's something to be said for that.
And he's one of those guys, Keith, that, you know, Walter Clayton's one of those players that he'll turn it over and then hustle down and break it up and get a block on the other end. I mean, he's just one of those guys. They're back in the O-Dome on Saturday against Mike White. Look, man, Georgia got off to a great start in non-conference play, 12-1, but then they've lost their last three games in league play. Had a tough loss to Arkansas the other night, but they'll come in obviously looking to play spoiler with the Gators being number five and them, you know, having a rough stretch here as of late. You know, in addition to the loss at Arkansas, they also lost to Tennessee, and they lost to Auburn. So really tough stretch that they've had. They do have a great win this season. They got a W over St. John's in the Atlantis Paradise Island Resort Classic. I got to find a way to get to that, Keith.
Well, I think doesn't Florida play in San Diego next season, I believe?
I do, and I told the wife that I think maybe we should go to San Diego for Thanksgiving next year.
You're going
to
need somebody to run quotes for you during that event too, obviously, so I can help out with that. But, you know, Zach, the funny thing about Mike White teams, look, we know he's going to have talent. He always does. But, man, it's the weirdest thing. Sometimes you flip around on the TV and Georgia's beating somebody they shouldn't be beating by 18 points. 2 weeks later, you flip on, they're losing to somebody they shouldn't be losing by 14 points. You never know what you're going to get from a Mike White team. But we know he's going to have talent, right? We do know that, okay? Florida can't take anybody for granted. Coming off of a close win at South Carolina, a close loss at home to Missouri, they've got to be dialed in for every single game. And I think those two games are going to help their mindset moving forward. I really do. I mean, you got to go out and play. Obviously, that's great to realize it, but it's another thing to go out and execute it. But they now know for sure, okay, literally anybody in this conference, because South Carolina was in last place, literally anyone in this conference can beat us as a team if we don't have our A game or aren't at least hustling at an A level, right? Playing hard at an A level. So I think that these have been some good learning experience. You got anything else you want to add, Zach? You ready to roll?
Yeah, just, you know, it's worth pointing out as well, not that these things matter, but there, you know, there is a little streak that the Gators have going on, you know, against Georgia. I mean, they've really put it on them, you know, recently, and I want to say it's 10 in a row or something like that. Mike White has not beat his former team yet. So the last time that they played, they swept them last season, including the win in the SEC tournament. So looking forward to this one. Obviously, we're going to keep tracking things on the football side as well. We've got, you know, a week left in the month of January. There's obviously this coaching interview that's taking place on Friday that we first reported at Gators Online. We'll see what happens with that. We'll keep you guys posted on how things are developing with the staff, where things are at with the as we first reported at Gators Online, it's the VP for football. That is going to be the name for this GM search that they've been having. That's expected to get wrapped up late January, early February. And then, of course, we've got National Signing Day coming up as well. Florida's still trying to add a couple more transfers to the class.
And one high school guy, we should point out.
That's
still
right.
Still trying to flip four-star cornerback Onis Cannonboni. I'm sure I'm butchering that. From Columbia, South Carolina. I think he's originally from England. But still trying to flip him, and he visited Florida last week, and it went well. Looks like the Gators are in good position to get him flipped from Tennessee, but it ain't done till it's done. And even sometimes, as we learned with the Deshaun Purdy situation, it ain't done even after it's done. So, anyway. All right, that's all I got. That's all Zach's got. For senior reporter Zach Abaverde, I am Keith Niebuhr. This was the Gators Online Show. Be sure to like and subscribe. There you go, right there. Be sure to like and subscribe this. It really helps with the algorithms on YouTube and all that stuff.
Right.
And it's good for our egos, too, quite frankly. So we appreciate everybody stopping by. Make sure you go to GatorsOnline.com right now and check out our great work there. Zach, thank you so much, man. Have a good weekend, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
Absolutely. Take care. See you guys.